Welcome to Our House, the only complete on-air resource for your home ownership needs. Now, here's the host of Our House, Peter Hunt.
Good morning and welcome to Our House. This is Peter Hunt, and the show is brought to you by the all-new HuntRealEstate.com, where everything is truly easier for your real estate and home ownership experience. I encourage you to go there today. We have a new feature there that we've only opened in the last few weeks, which allows you effectively, well, literally, to look at three different valuation methodologies for your particular home or any piece of real estate anywhere. It's only on at HuntRealEstate.com, which is powered by Hunt Real Estate ERA here in Buffalo, Niagara, all across upstate, Rochester, Syracuse, the greater Albany area, Utica, Watertown, and way out west to Phoenix, Arizona. And the show is also brought to you by Hunt Mortgage. Call them today, 633-3700, and ask one of our skilled mortgage consultants to work with you to find the lowest rate and closing cost for your particular home financing needs and wants, and that's guaranteed. There are certain restrictions, but check on our website at huntmortgage.com, but also ask about the many exclusive programs we have, which include the pre-purchase commitment that allows you at no cost or risk to effectively enter the market to find your next home with cash. So call Hunt Mortgage today, 633-3700, for personalized, customized, what we call knock-your-socks-off service. And don't forget about the first-ever 24/7, 365 real estate hotline, the Hunt Hotline, which gives you access to all available information about any property listed for sale in Buffalo, Niagara, Rochester, Syracuse, all across upstate, and even out to Phoenix, Arizona. Simply dial 716-631-4800. Enter the street number of the house you want to know about, no matter whose listing it is, and the hotline will prompt you with a choice of street names. Select the one you want. You'll hear a brief description, and then you'll be texted a link to a dedicated website on that property, all automatically and just that fast. Anytime in any market we serve on any listing, whether it's ours or any other brokers. If you drive by some of the real estate signs today, there's 42 things on it, and it's hard to tell what to do when you look at it. So just dial 631-4800. No matter whose listing it is, we'll get you the information immediately, and you'll be texted that link to a dedicated website on that property. It doesn't have to be our listing. We have a very active real estate market right now, and as many of you know, and this is a result of the what we believe, the momentum that we're all feeling in the community these days, but if you honestly look at it across the country, it's true in many communities today. And we're going to be discussing this and a bunch of our topics with our guests today. But before we go to that, I just want to remind everybody that we are Hunt Real Estate is the official real estate and relocation provider of our hometown professional teams, the Buffalo Bills, the Buffalo Sabres, and the Rochester Americans. We are live today on WBEN 9:30 a.m. If you want to talk to us here in the studio with any question about real estate or any question for my guest, 803-0930 and 1-800-616-9236 if you're long distance, and *930 if you're mobile. Those are all free calls. So call us here in the studio. We do have a very special show for you today. In the studio with me today is Chris Jacobs. Mr. Jacobs is a member of the New York State Senate from the 60th District. Good morning, Chris.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
It's great to have you back. It's been about 8 or 9 months since you've been on. A lot's been happening, but most recently you just made an announcement. Why don't you tell us a little about what's latest announcement that came out of your office
In regards to Canal Side?
Yes.
Oh, thank you for mentioning that. I'm very excited about that. We announced yesterday that I was able to secure $1.5 million for three projects that are in the midst of trying to get completed and under construction in Canal Side. That would be the Explore More Children's Museum, the Carousel Project, which is going to be restoring a 1924 carousel that was built in North Tonawanda, that's going to be located in proximity to the Children's Museum right down in Canal Side as well. And then also a major expansion of the Naval and Servicemen's Park that is going to really enhance and continue to increase the great work that they have done. So I made a $500,000 contribution through state funds to each one of those groups, and it's my hope that this will help in their efforts, their capital campaign efforts, and to conclude their construction financing efforts so they can really keep going to get these things up and running. Hopefully next year, I think the Children's Museum is one that's going to be ready in 2018. I just think that these are great projects. They've been in the works for a long time, and I think one of the reasons that Canal Side continues to thrive is that it seems like every season there's additional offerings, additional new experiences to broaden the base of visitors, and I think these are ones that will continue that effort. in particular in not in the summer, you know, in winter activities. Certainly the Explore More will be one. And I think that is what we want to see more. We've certainly seen that in terms of the skating and the Harbor Center, but I think we want to see more of that. It's amazing. Over the last number of years, the amount of visitors have increased to over a million visitors a year to Canalside. It's my hope that the Explore More in and of itself is predicting about 250,000 visitors. So I think with these three coming online very close together, this will take it to a new level. I really hope we can get close to doubling that in the next few years. And that is, you know, incredible in terms of the benefit to Canalside. But as we've seen, I think it's a spinoff for the entire region.
About a year ago, I had a group of business people in from the rest of the state, and they wanted to see Canalside. So we wound up having as our convention hotel, one of the hotels down at Canalside, and I led a tour.
Now, oh, really?
I didn't know what I was doing. So I called the Erie Canal Harbor Development Corporation. I think that's its title today. Mm-hmm. And they gave me this beautiful map and described. So I did my homework in advance, and I walked myself through all the projects that have been going on there and the ones, as you point out, that are still to come. And there's a lot more, obviously. But this is great stuff, and it's... It was a terrible day. It was in May. It was cold and rainy, but the place was still jumping, which was pretty amazing. And they were blown away by it. Couldn't stop asking questions about it, and went on all day long. We had a whole day of programs. We went from there to the what is now going to be the Tesla plant, and it was a most interesting day. But in any event, our mission here on the show is, as I think you may recall, Chris, is to help our listeners protect and enhance their investment in real estate. Last week, we did a show with Howard Zemsky, and we're talking about Empire State Development Corporation, their investment here, and what the governor is doing. And we had one caller who called in and said, well, aren't we just picking winners and losers at the governmental level? Where's that effect? Is it a delicate balance that you have to keep between kind of doing that picking and winners and losers and doing your job in terms of making our state hopefully a more competitive place to do business? And tell me how you weigh that. You come from the Republican side of the aisle in a Republican House, the Senate.
Mm-hmm.
How does that go, and how do you bring home the bacon, so to speak, in these three projects and still balance that concept, I guess, that maybe if you look around the country to see what states are developing fastest, maybe the fastest way to growth is by reducing the tax and regulatory burden and letting free enterprise go its way.
And I would agree with you in that. I'd make the distinction that the announcement yesterday was all nonprofit organizations, foundations.
I didn't mean to make fun of it.
So I think that giving grants to those entities, I would distinguish a little different than a grant to a private business. And I would agree with you. I think what we should strive to do is make the overall landscape more competitive, as opposed to, and now we're talking economic development dollars, as you say, picking winners and losers. And historically, government's been pretty bad on those choices. And it really, I think, when you're an existing business trying to struggle and then you find out a new kid on the block gets a big chunk of money because they're a new kid on the block and now a competitor, that really takes the wind out of the sails of the private marketplace. So I think that ideally I'd love to see, actually I've heard that statistics have shown we have spend more money on economic development than nearly any other state, yet we're, you know, typically ranked at the bottom as far as competitiveness. So I think we really should ask ourselves, is this the best model, or is it more try to decrease the tax and regulatory environment and allow the private sector to thrive by entrepreneurship, by the private sector seizing opportunities that they see, putting risk capital. You know, it's just not the same when you're throwing someone else's money at a project, you know, government, and saying, well, I believe in this. Well, it's still someone else's money.
That's true. And isn't it, you know, one of the things that Howard and I discussed directly and indirectly and really have over the years is really, and this goes back to discussions that I've had with other people in our community with a certain degree of influence, and it goes something like this. To make the kind of changes that might be absolutely essential if we want to truly be competitive as a state would involve monumental change. Right, the regulatory situation in the state is oppressive mm-hmm. from a businesswoman's perspective. The tax situation, we know where we stand tax-wise, and it's not good competitively. But to make those changes, given the obligations that the state has already created for the use of those tax dollars, which aren't going to go away quickly, shouldn't we then balance that pressure to hopefully make us a more competitive basic environment with grabbing what we can grab and taking what becomes available, and then maybe doing what we can do to engineer that as best we can, even though that system, as you point out, is generally flawed mm-hmm. when you pick winners and losers. So how do you stand on that kind of balance between...
So I would say right now, in the model we have where we do tend to give grants, then we're talking again economic development and tax incentives, a couple things. A lot of my colleagues in Albany are very critical of the regional development councils. Mm-hmm. And I think they've had maybe in their regions different experiences with it. I'm in favor of, I think that's a good model. Frankly, I think George Pataki had something similar in concept that he never rolled out. But to recognize that this is a diverse state, diverse needs, and to have business leaders and those in other fields be able to come together and determine with good information where we should focus our limited resources, I think that's a good thing. And you know, a lot of that hopefully is infrastructure, which government should do which then spurs hopefully private investment. I will say that one of the tools that is very commonly used in New York State is tax incentives. Mm-hmm. I recently passed a piece of legislation based on a study that showed that we have in New York State, I believe, one of the highest percentage of tax incentive offerings, but no monitoring mechanism of their effectiveness. So when we offer something like a film tax credit, which is a very lucrative thing, and now we've had some movies shot here, which is really neat to see, but the question is, shouldn't periodically there be an objective analysis done to inform decision makers whether for the outlay of those tax incentives, is there a return on that? And we don't do that. We don't have anything to kind of monitor that. So I think those are the type of things which I would hope if could be done would inform the public, inform legislative bodies on making informed decisions on good public policy.
Are you working on such a mechanism?
I offered legislation on that. It's something that the state comptroller's office has been supportive of, it started to get a little bit of traction this session. We'll see, but I this would be not even the comptroller doing it. It would be kind of putting out a bid to have an independent entity do this again to inform us. I think that there's a lot of instances from my limited experience up in Albany that we are not provided sufficient information to make good decisions. We don't. Another piece of legislation I'd offer is that you hear often right now in the federal discussions on healthcare about the CBO, Congressional Budget Office, scoring the healthcare bills, and a debate about, you know, whether they do it right or wrong. But at least they have something that's pretty typically viewed as very credible, nonpartisan. We have no such budget office. So very frequently, the norm, when I get a piece of legislation, there's no scoring of what the cost impact is on the government or a score of the cost impact, and this is another piece of legislation, on businesses as far as unfunded mandates, which is a huge issue for our state. So I think that if we could have this, and I think there's some people who like the fact that there's an absence of information because then the rhetoric can just fly. Mm-hmm. But if we were informed more, I think we could be making better decisions.
I couldn't agree more. I mean, it's we've had your colleagues on this show from the legislature more so than from the Senate of late, and it's a mystery, really. It's a mystery to understand the process. Because as a citizen, you look at this and you say the governor, through ESDC and other mechanisms, tax credits, for example, pre-existing legislation, but the governor seems to be the guy with the bags of cash.
Yes, and this is as far as those regional councils. I said I like the concept of it. The unfortunate thing is they really do not have a lot of power. It's really, you think they're making the decisions, but 80% of the decision is made by the governor. So now it's kind of just gives the governor coverage that it's an objective process and it's just not him. But really, you have one person more than ever before throwing around immense amounts of cash. For instance, I mean, Solar City was not an outgrowth of a recommendation of the regional council. This came out of I don't know where, and $750 to $800 million of our Buffalo Billion went to that one project. I certainly hope it's wildly successful, but I hope we never take that kind of risk again with that amount of money, putting all our eggs in that one basket.
Well, that, I think, is a lot of the mystery from our listener standpoint, certainly from my standpoint. Howard talked about this last week, that we did spend some time talking about the Solar City plant. First of all, it was really a deal for Solera, a company in California that was not really much of a company at all. And the plant was originally going to be much smaller than it is now. Well, then Solar City acquires Solera, and then ultimately Tesla acquires Solar City, and now Panasonic is actually going to be operating the plant. So it's kind of a circuitous route mm-hmm. to get to where we're going to be. And I recall numbers, and maybe I was wrong, something like 3,500 people or 4,000 people are going to be working there. Now it's 1,500, and it looks like it's going to start with much less than that. And to your point about this monitoring, the effectiveness of dollars like this, there's no such system. So there's no, if somebody says they're going to do something, a business, and receives a benefit from the government, the state government, there's no clawback mechanism.
Yeah, I think they can negotiate a clawback, and I think I heard the other day that there was some sort of clawback if they didn't achieve some base level job numbers, and we know that the job numbers have continued to go down. It was initially there was going to be a certain amount, significantly more in the plant. Now they're counting, external, they count you hire. The clawback is something that I think is Empire State Development uses frequently, but I don't think there's a broader perspective on analyzing the multitude of tax programs and credits that we have and whether, are they, do they make sense to be as far as return on investment, or could all that money be used for more across the board decreases in our tax rates and allow the all the businesses to have a benefit as opposed to, as you said, the picking of the winners and losers.
Well, and to that point, dealing with our kind of core topic in the show, real estate, perhaps as well as anybody, mm-hmm. that a lot of the projects that we tout as being great projects here in Buffalo, even the private projects, would not have happened if it weren't for that tax credit system. Mm-hmm. Where do you stand on that? Because, again, this goes to that issue. What do we do about this?
Well, here's the thing, and this is right on as far as somebody who's done development. I am a big supporter of the historic tax credit. I love preserving historic properties. I think it's probably been one of the most significant programs as far as the comeback of downtown Buffalo. But one of the significant moves that was done several years ago was the state passing a companion state historic tax credit on top of the federal one, which really was the impetus for, I believe, a lot of the projects going on downtown. Now, I have not seen an analysis if it really, on paper and a balance sheet, whether it really generated more revenue than it cost. Now, you'd have to look at that because a lot of the revenue it would generate would be local revenue versus state, but I think that's an analysis that at least somebody could say, okay, it did cost the state government and we didn't get a lot back, but our local communities are stronger, are able to be more self-sufficient, and that's something that, on balance, is a good benefit in a program. And at least for Buffalo, I would think that's what you would find.
Mm-hmm. I think that's true. A lot of people would say, well, a lot of this is unmeasurable, too. If there wasn't a tax credit available for to redo the Lafayette Hotel, mm-hmm. and that eyesore as it was would have stayed there, what would that have done to the whole momentum on the medical campus, which is just a block or two away?
Right.
So how important is an investment, so to speak, through a tax credit like that? Again, you're picking a winner.
Right.
But at the same time,
I would distinguish that in the picking the winner, though, in that program where you're not it's not discretionary in terms of, oh, we like this project.
There's qualifications.
There's certain qualifications you've meet. I've done projects that I wanted to do historic credit. It didn't meet it because we couldn't preserve certain things we needed to. So I think that is better than the just we like this for a small group of people choose this project and dole out the money. But I was amazed looking at it. There's so many tax credit programs throughout the state. I'm more on business side of things. And, you know, all in isolation sound good, but I have no idea if they generate money and how much they cost. And I think that it really is irresponsible as a legislator to not ask for that and get it.
We're going to break soon, but I just want to ask you to think about something, and our listeners too. Have we gone too far as a state, or did we go too far a long time ago, and it's just kind of a momentum that we can't draw
right,
back from?
Right,
it.
Right.
It's there, and we can't stop it. Or is this going to be, has the climate we've created through the mechanisms we've talked about really created a new future for New York State? And on that note, we're going to go to these messages. We'll be right back with more with Chris Jacobs after these important messages.
If you're a homeowner age 62 or older, you owe it to yourself to look into a reverse mortgage. Reverse mortgages give seniors many different options to access the equity in their home. There's even a reverse mortgage for purchase available. For more information, call Karen Johnson, a reverse mortgage specialist at Hunt Mortgage at 633-3700 or visit huntmortgage.com. Karen Johnson, NMLS number 485939. Hunt Mortgage is a licensed mortgage banker, New York Department of Financial Services, and an equal opportunity lender.
Welcome back to Our House. This is Peter Hunt, and the show is brought to you by the all-new HuntRealEstate.com, where everything is easier for your real estate and homeownership experience. And as I said earlier in the show, go there today and just check it out. If nothing else, you know, there's all kinds of places that say, you know, call us, we'll give you a free market analysis. And that, to me, is really history. When you can go online to a place like HuntRealEstate.com and not get one valuation, but three. It's all done automatically, and it can be on your property or any other property you want to find out about. You're looking at something. Let's say you use the Hunt Hotline. You're sitting in front of a house, and you want to know more about that house, but you say, well, what's this place really worth? Right on your phone, you can go to huntrealestate.com, and you can find out. It's pretty amazing, and it is the only place in the world where you can find a complete inventory of homes available here in Buffalo, Niagara, all across upstate and out to Phoenix, Arizona, and you'll also find access to a complete set of homeownership services to support your purchase or sale at huntrealestate.com or just the experience of home ownership. Huntrealestate.com is powered by Hunt Real Estate ERA across the state and out to Phoenix. And this show is also brought to you by Hunt Mortgage. And for more information about our many exclusive programs that allow you to do many things, including roll the cost of home improvements into your mortgage, allowing you to effectively buy the before and live the after, call 633-3700 and ask for details. And we do live in a community with, you know, a mixed bag of housing stock in terms of its age. And sometimes when you open up a wall, as my guest only knows too well, you find out all kinds of things. This allows you, through the Buy the Before and Live the After program, to at least know what you're in for, because all the estimates have to be up front. So, and also ask about our pre-purchase commitment and even our warm home loan, only at Hunt Mortgage, 633-3700. And if you just want to ask a question about anything relative to real estate and you don't want to go through websites or anything else, call the Hunt Customer Service Center. The only one of its kind in North America, 633-9400. And one of our customer service reps will either answer your question right there or instantly direct you to the appropriate professional for whatever it is you may need, whether you're considering buying or selling or financing or insuring or even fixing up a home. And remember, our guarantee stands. We will sell your home or ERA will buy it. That's the best guarantee that exists in the industry. That's the seller's security plan available only through a Hunt Real Estate ERA agent. I'm in the studio today with Chris Jacobs, a member of the New York State Senate from the 60th District, and we've been talking about, kind of at a high level, the whole issue of the government involvement in development and how it happens. We've been talking about tax credits and even direct grants that Mr. Jacobs has been involved with and others, and what that means in terms of the community momentum and something that we, I think, all feel here. And I asked you to think about kind of that balance and before the break, Chris, and just freewheel on that a little bit.
The balance of
how we as a community should look at this whole thing in terms of being able to take advantage of what we need to take advantage of or can take advantage of versus kind of removing the shackles and, as one organization, Unshackle Upstate, right, talks about, and letting the market and private enterprise do what it does best.
I that's a very good question. I think that I certainly tried right now, being a new senator, realizing I'm not, New York State government is not going to change overnight, and so I, one of the things I ran on is that we would, advocating that we get our fair share from Albany. So certainly when I see, if there's a pot of money right now that's there, which I know if it's not coming here, it's going somewhere else, it's, that I'll try to fight for it. And that was what I tried to do yesterday, getting the money for the canal side project. But on a concurrent path, I think we need to continue to fight. And if it's incremental, then it's incremental. I hope it moves faster than we are at the pace right now as far as just the more fundamental things that make a region competitive long term, and the cost of doing business and the cost of living. And one win that we did get this year in the budget was workers' comp reform, because we have one of the highest workers' comp rates. And I was happy to see that this year's rates came out and there was a 4.5% decrease, and I think a lot of that was due to the reforms that we did pass. A lot more to do. I think one of the successes of the legislature and the governor over the last number of years would be the property tax cap. I think that has been a significant development, having that. I know it's tough on local municipalities and school districts, but we just have to bend that curve, especially school districts, of how quickly those increases were happening year after year after year. And that was really one of the things that is makes it tough for people to stay in their home, folks on fixed incomes, and businesses who are locating here.
There's no question about that. You mentioned the workers' comp reform, and I think the first time I had a conversation about that was 25 years ago, and it's they were promising change at that time, and we really saw nothing, a little bit somewhere along the way there, but this is the biggest move that legislation has taken in a long, long time, and I commend you and your colleagues for that. This concept of a concurrent path is a interesting one. I'm going to use your quote there, and also the concept of getting our fair share. Years ago, I had a conversation with one of our congressmen about just this very thing, and his point was that there was a if you're sitting there as an elected official, and there's a pot of money that's just been voted into existence, what is your responsibility? And just like you say, is it our fair share or what? And how do we determine that fair share? That's interesting. How did you take a look at the available pots of money and say, what would be our fair share? You talked about measuring before. Is there a way to measure that?
Well, I guess I would just say I fight as aggressively as I can, as everyone else is, and it probably balances out or doesn't balance out, because the downstate has so much more power. So I do the best I can. When I ran and talked about that we weren't getting our fair share, a lot of people criticized me and said that's not true. New York upstate gets more money from downstate. And my view on that was
the balance of dollars coming back and
balance
forth.
Of dollars. But my view on that is, well, wait a second. Downstate has been dominant in the legislative process for years. They have passed so many laws that have been onerous, disproportionately impacting upstate Western New York as far as killing businesses. So I'm not going to thank you for getting welfare and, you know,
sure.
Medicaid and the things that deal with the poverty that you helped create. So I'm talking about things that are going to help us, again, be self-sufficient and independent in terms of economic development, infrastructure, and those sort of things.
You know, the you mentioned Medicaid, and of course, this is a kind of the third rail of politics touching these kinds of things at the national level. Yet at the same time, they created the Medicaid program, the national government did. And there, I believe there's 36 programs in Medicaid, and states can elect which ones they want. We've elected
all of them, yeah.
33 or almost all of them, which include kind of some bizarre things.
Mm-hmm.
It seems impossible to roll that back.
Very, very difficult. Absolutely. And I know the governor has had a lot of work efforts to try to rein in the costs of Medicaid. And I know with the healthcare debate, there's been a lot of criticisms about that and criticizing the proposals. I'm not an expert on what's going on the federal level, but I will say that we do need to acknowledge this ticking time bomb that we have for this Medicaid entitlement, that it's eating up all the property taxes of local counties. Mm-hmm. And New York is unique in that they impose on counties an obligation to pay a portion of it. Now, they have decreased that with recognition over the last number of years, which has been a godsend to Erie County, I think. But for that, Erie County would really be in trouble. But the question is it sustainable at the rate it's growing right now? And I think the answer is no.
Well, that's not a good thought. But at the same time, we're stuck in that system.
Absolutely.
So I guess we have to kind of work around it. And you mentioned a couple of things like the property tax cap that may balance a little bit about that.
I think that, I know the Collins Faso amendment that was talking about that the state had to pay entirely Medicaid. I'm on a co-sponsor bill to do that, at the state level, because I just don't think having this bifurcated situation where New York State dictates the range of benefits, as you said, almost offering all the goodies, and yet someone else has to pay. I mean, between the federal government and local government, they pay the least of the three, and that doesn't breed responsibility. So if they're making the determination, if they're calling the shots, then the state should run it. And I would, if I was the county executive, that's a deal I would support, because I think long term, that is not good to have that situation for local governments.
We're going to go to break in a little bit, but I want you to think about going forward. In the last segment, I'd like to, from your perspective, having been in the Senate now for a while, what you would like to see happen going forward from the state's perspective. Because if you look at the issues that we face here from a competitive standpoint, all roads lead to Albany, ultimately, mm-hmm. just for the reasons you said. I mean, everybody's property tax here is deeply affected by the choices that were made about the Medicaid legislation years and years ago. But it's extremely important that I think our listeners understand what someone in a position like yours feels they can do relative to that whole perspective. And then I want you to comment also, think about this, and I want the listeners to think about this too. A few weeks ago, I had your cousin on, Jerry Jacobs Jr., and he talked. One of the things we talked a great deal about was why they've elected to stay in Buffalo when a company like that could go anywhere. And, in fact, probably was enticed to go mm-hmm. lots of different places and chose to stay here. And he spoke a lot about the character of the people in this community and why that meant so much to his family and your family. And I guess I'd like you to think about that, too, and what that means to you as a state senator, because it's important that we and all of our listeners get an idea of what the future may look like, given all the things we've been talking about so far. And we'll be right back with more from our house years after these important messages.
If you're a homeowner age 62 or older, you owe it to yourself to look into a reverse mortgage. Reverse mortgages give seniors many different options to access the equity in their home. There's even a reverse mortgage for purchase available. For more information, call Karen Johnson, a reverse mortgage specialist at Hunt Mortgage at 633-3700 or visit huntmortgage.com. Karen Johnson, NMLS number 485939. Hunt Mortgage is a licensed mortgage banker, New York Department of Financial Services, and an equal opportunity lender.
Welcome back to our house. This is Peter Hunt, and the show is brought to you by the all-new HuntRealEstate.com. I encourage you to go there today, where everything is truly easier for your real estate and homeownership experience. And also, this show is brought to you by Hunt Mortgage, home of the low rate and closing cost guarantee. That's 633-3700. Call them today and learn about how you can get into your next home at amazingly low rates still today. It's shocking to me. My guest here in the studio today is Chris Jacobs, a member of the New York State Senate from the 60th District. But it's shocking to me, Chris, and I'm sure you hear this from time to time, how people think 4% is a high rate. I mean, it's just shocking to me. They say, well, I don't want to move because I refinanced at 2.95. What would I possibly do paying that extra percent to get the home I want? But it's silly. But I think that whole refinancing thing.
Do you remember what your rate was on your first house you bought?
I certainly do. And it was I bought my first house was right at the end of the Carter administration, and my interest rate was 8.5%, governed by law, usury law.
Hmm.
And so you had what varied every day was the down payment requirement, because you couldn't charge any more interest. So so the equity thing was always the piece. Then, of course, that usury laws were lifted all across the country under the Carter administration. Rates shot up, as you know, and they got as high as 17%. I remember I had a 17% mortgage. So I was rebuilding a house on the west side, and a new bank came to town, and the president of the bank took me out for dinner, and he said, you know, rates are 17% today, Peter, but for you, 16%. I said, boy, thank you so much, Steve. That's remarkable. Anyway, I'm in the studio today with Chris Jacobs, a member of the New York State Senate, and we've been talking about the wide-ranging topics relative to our state and what it's like to be a state senator. And I just want you to reflect a little bit, Chris, on, now that you've been there a while, how you feel about optimistically about your ability to make a difference, because I know you're the kind of guy that wants to do that. And as I saw what you did at the county clerk's office, as many of us did that are close to that whole thing, I truly appreciate that work.
Well, I think that I certainly, one reason I ran was I felt strongly that the state Senate needed to stay in Republican majority hands, because it's the only branch of government, and it's really not a Republican issue versus Democrat. It's more a downstate versus the rest of the state, and the state Senate is the only branch that is represented or has a good share of representation from legislators that are from outside the New York City area. Albany, I mean, the assembly is dominated by New York City representatives. We have a governor from New York City. We have a comptroller from New York City. We have attorney general from New York City. Without the state Senate there is nobody that's really a voice for the rest of New York State outside New York City. And the real concern is if the Senate flipped, they're just the resources, focus would even be more New York City centric. And so I felt that. And there's the majority is only kept by one. We have one more than the other. So I felt me acquiring the seat would help keep that majority. And I think I've played a role in that. I think that helps advocate for this region because we have leverage being in the majority. I think my view is I am optimistic. I do believe I can do things. I also am realistic that am I going to change Albany big picture overnight? No, but I think that we can fight to do things to help look, the region I think is doing quite well. We are very resilient. We're coming back. We've never seen this kind of renaissance, at least in my lifetime. I think what I'm focusing on doing things that can help our region be more self-sufficient, building our tax base again so we can be in control more of our own destiny and not be as dependent at hand for Albany's largesse.
Interesting. We have a couple of callers. I want to come back to a thought that I expressed before the break, but we have a couple of callers. This is Tony. Tony, how can we help you?
Yes, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Jacobs, for your leadership. I would like to ask you, why do you think that there has not been an agency formed to follow up on the money that's given to private enterprise when they promise they're going to get, for example, 500 jobs and you end up with 100? Mm-hmm. You were talking about that earlier in your bill. Why do you think up to this point that has never been established? Do you think it's just so that this money's given away and it's never followed up?
That's a very good question. I know that Empire State Development does have clawback provisions frequently when they give direct grants. But to your broader question and why I propose this legislation is there is, and I could see a strong argument made that it's intentional, the lack of information and the lack of oversight, because that breeds a lack of accountability. And it's very easy to give the money out and right now and not be held accountable for results. And that's something that really bothers me because it's a lot of money. It's a lot of money that New York State spends on those sort of things. And we just don't have sufficient information whether those tax dollars that we've taken from private citizens are expended in a responsible way.
We have another caller here, Chris. This is John from Rochester. John, how can we help you?
Hey, Peter. Hey, Chris. Chris, was there any pushback from the legislature when Governor Cuomo unilaterally increased the minimum wage rates for state employees? And number two, project labor agreements. If we cut out project labor agreements and some of these mandates, the taxpayers would be off the hook for a lot of these costly projects that are a result of some of these non-competitive project labor agreements. What are your thoughts on those 2 points?
Well, thank you. I wasn't aware of the state employee issue on the minimum wage, but you know, I will say that what is really one of the things I've been amazed by is the kind of unilateral decisions that are frequently made by the governor and by agencies that are run by the executive branch. And the one issue was when they passed when he imposed the minimum wage on fast food workers without legislative approval. He couldn't work with the legislature. This was a couple of years ago. I wasn't in the legislature. But he passed it on, you know, the McDonald's of the world, this $15 minimum wage. And then subsequently, there was a legislative action to put a minimum wage in, which was phased in. And one good thing about that was it was a recognition that there was a difference in downstate and upstate. But we have a real problem right now because the governor never removed the executive order he did or through his labor board on fast food. So you can have a situation where you have a convenience store where the guy working behind the counter, the store is on one minimum wage scale, and the Subway that is renting space in the same store is on a different schedule. And this is a big problem. Dunkin' Donuts left the area recently. One of the reasons is that because they were hit by the $15 minimum wage. So there's consequences for those sort of actions that are not vetted through the checks and balances, I believe, of a legislative process. But we see this over and over again. We just had an issue where the Public Service Commission, which is an independent entity, but the governor controls the majority of those appointments, they decided they wanted to save a couple floundering nuclear power plants in New York. They are imposed a fee onto all energy, all our electric bills for the next 10 years. It's going to be a total cost of $7.6 billion dollars is one of the estimates that's now going to be given to one private company to run these nuclear plants. That was never vetted by the legislature. That was done by a three-member board that I think at the point in time. And this is going to impact homeowners, school districts, businesses, and there has been no process in terms of how that was done. That kind of shadow government is something that is something that I really want to spend some more time on, because I think it is really an issue. It is somewhat unique to New York, the amount of independent authorities we have with the amount of debt they're acquiring that they're putting on us. So it begs that question. I think it's a very valid one.
There's a whole maze of things out there that we know nothing of, seemingly the average guy knows nothing mm-hmm. about. These authorities that you talk about are all over the place mm-hmm. for all kinds mm-hmm. of things. We only have a few minutes left here, and I'd like you to talk for a second about just the infrastructure issue in the state. And for example, we know there's a huge problem in New York City with the subway system, mm-hmm. massive problem. And the cost is going to be staggering, and it's been ignored for a long time. Yet we've got the state, somebody has to be responsible for moving a lot of people around down there. And what is your thought on that? Is that a topic that your house is looking at these days or not?
I think it is, and it will be when we come back. It seemed like that was kind of blowing up towards the end of session. Mm-hmm. And as much as I, advocate for, I focus on my area and upstate, certainly recognition that, the citizens of New York City need to have adequate and efficient transportation. And look, we want New York City to thrive because it helps us too. And I think, if you go to the airport on a Monday morning, you're going to see a lot of people there flying and do business in New York. And I think there's been a lot of enterprising people here, law firms, accounting firms, and others who have found the ability to generate a lot of money bringing business back up here because of how affordably we can do business compared to somebody in New York City. So I think that's something I want to look more at. But I think that certainly the MTA is going to be a big issue. It certainly kept the governor busy this summer because of some, I think, bad planning that has happened there, and it really does need to be resolved.
In our last couple minutes, I'd like you to touch on this, and I think it's kind of a good way to close the show today, and that is to go back to what your cousin was talking about in terms of the character of people in upstate Buffalo in particular, and why they felt at Delaware North a sense of responsibility to keep the businesses here. Do you run into that often, or are you presented more with a situation where if the state doesn't do X, Y, or Z, our company's out of here?
Well, I think that it's exciting to be a legislator right now because of, I think, the new day in Western New York. I think there is a much more hopeful and positive feeling, and some of it's certainly perception, but there's, I think, reality to back that up, too. I think people are seeing more opportunities here. Obviously, our employment rate, is it a better state than it used to be? I think we see a lot more young people coming here, maybe because there is also a premium on quality of life and doing the things they want to do. So I think we have, this is an unprecedented time I haven't seen in my lifetime, and I just want to be part of trying to help make sure that's the new normal here and that we continue to build upon that.
Well, you certainly have, Chris Jacobs. Certainly, as your previous experience in the public sector, I know from personal experience your leadership at the county clerk's office was, that's kind of an unsexy job, but you did a great job.
Thank
there,
you.
Making the process
thank
a lot
you,
better for those of us that need it a lot. But also, I want to thank you for the good work you're doing at the state senate now, and I want to thank you for the great contribution you make in our real estate community as well. So, Chris Jacobs, thanks for being with us this morning.
Thank you so much for having me.
I'd like to thank our listeners. We'll be back again next week at the same time. And remember, when it comes to real estate, Western New York is Hunt Country.